This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Air raid sirens sounded in South Korea after the North fired about a dozen missiles into its direction Wednesday. At least one of them has landed near the rival's tense sea border. The launches came hours after North Korea threatened to use nuclear weapons to get the U.S. and South Korea to pay the most horrible price in history. The Joint Chiefs of Staff said in a statement earlier Wednesday that it detected three short-range ballistic missiles fired from the North's eastern coastal town of Wonsan. It said one of the missiles landed 16 miles away from the rival sea border. U.S. President Joe Biden is ripping into Republicans on a campaign swing through the U.S. state of Florida. We get more from AP correspondent Tim McGuire.
Democracy is on the ballot this year.
President Biden campaigning for Florida Democrats Charlie Crist running for governor and Senate candidate Val Demings telling a crowd at Florida Memorial University, an historically black university, that GOP candidates across the nation seem determined to restrict elections in the future.
They're coming after your right to vote. And who get to count the vote? No, for real. You got 350 so election deniers on the ballot on the Republican ticket.
Biden will campaign in New Mexico Thursday, California on Friday, and Pennsylvania on Saturday in the run-up to Election Day Tuesday. I'm Tim McGuire.
Saudi Arabia has shared intelligence with American officials that suggest Iran could be preparing for an imminent attack on the kingdom. That's according to three U.S. officials who spoke Tuesday on the condition of anonymity. The heightened concerns about a potential attack on Saudi Arabia came as the Biden administration is criticizing Tehran for its ongoing crackdown on protests and condemning it for sending hundreds of drones to Russia for use in the war in Ukraine. This is VOA News. More details are emerging about the suspect charged with attacking the husband of the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. AP correspondent Norman Hall.
Accused of breaking into House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's home, beating her husband and seeking to kidnap her, told police he was on a suicide mission and had plans to target other California and federal officials. That's according to a court filing. David DePapp was ordered held without bail. His public defender entered a not guilty plea on his behalf. District Attorney Brooke Jenkins pushed back on some critics who say the case is more a reflection of crime in San Francisco rather than a political attack.
I think it's more so representative of the state of politics in the United States.
A court filing says the attack left Paul Pelosi unconscious and in a pool of his own blood. I'm Norman Hall.
Brazil's president is still not conceding the election he lost to his leftist rival, the former president. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
Jair Bolsonaro spoke publicly Tuesday for the first time since results of the presidential election were announced. But he didn't mention those results, which showed Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva winning with 50.9% of the vote to Bolsonaro's 49.1%. Bolsonaro did say he will follow the rules laid out in the nation's constitution. And his chief of staff told reporters he'd been authorized to begin the transition process. Bolsonaro has repeatedly questioned the reliability of Brazil's electoral system, and his 2 days of silence prompted demonstrations by supporters, including truck drivers who blocked roads with burning tires and their big rigs. I'm Ben Thomas.
Former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu appears to hold a narrow lead in the Israeli elections. That is according to exit polls. The vote could pave the way for him to return to power thanks to a boost from an extreme right-wing ally known for inflammatory anti-Arab comments. The exit polls were preliminary and final results would change as votes are tallied overnight Wednesday. However, they pointed to continued rightward shift in the Israeli electorate, further dimming hopes for peace with the Palestinians and setting the stage for a possible conflict with the Biden administration and Israel supporters in the United States. And the U.S. Tuesday's election was Israel's fifth in less than 4 years. You can find more at voanews.com. Again, that is voanews.com. Via remotes, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Thank you. Today's Wednesday, November 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, North Korea issues a nuclear attack threat against U.S. and South Korean forces amid military drills on the peninsula.
The North Korean regime has threatened the United States with nuclear capabilities before. Intercontinental ballistic missile, just by the definition you can see, is to go across to another continent. Their target would be the United States.
Tension rises between Turkey and Greece over a gas deal with Libya.
The energy exploration deal between Turkey and the Libyan government of national accord, which Turkey militarily backs, is a big victory for Ankara.
And the World Health Organization warns of disease outbreaks and malnutrition among Pakistan flood victims. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. North Korea issued a veiled threat Tuesday to use nuclear weapons to get the U.S. and South Korea to, quote, pay the most horrible price in history, unquote, an escalation of its fiery rhetoric targeting the ongoing large-scale military drills between its rivals. Animosity on the Korean Peninsula has been running high in recent months, with North Korea testing a string of nuclear-capable missiles and adopting a law authorizing the preemptive use of its nuclear weapons in a broad range of situations. At a news conference, Pentagon Press Secretary Brigadier General Pat Ryder said the training exercise will involve about 240 aircraft and thousands of serving members from South Korea and the U.S. For more, I spoke with VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob.
The Pentagon hasn't had a direct reaction since this happened, but this is nothing new. The North Korean regime has threatened the United States with nuclear capabilities before. That's why they test their ICBMs. It's intercontinental ballistic missile, just by the definition you can see, is to go across to another continent. Their target would be the United States. So the United States is very clear-eyed on what North Korea wants. We've seen North Korea fire hundreds of shells in the inter-Korean maritime buffer zones. That this is a step further. As you said, the United States will definitely have to be wary and continue to watch what North Korea is doing, because many experts will tell you that North Korea is using these threats and taking these opportunities, the U.S. and South Korea having these exercises, to launch more weapons to try to develop their nuclear weapons program. And with every launch, it gets closer and closer and closer to developing a nuclear weapon.
Despite the threat from North Korea, is the United States and its allies going ahead with this military drill?
Oh, yes. They're still doing these military drills. They are not concerned about the nuclear threat against their military forces in the Korean Peninsula. And should North Korea decide to make good on its threat, the U.S. forces in South Korea have the motto of fight tonight. They are ready to go. This is what they drill for. If Seoul were to become invaded or if something were to hit Japan, they would be ready to defend their allies.
How large is this current military drill?
There's been much larger drills in the past. I mean, we've had large-scale operations with Korea for years and years. So this one, I believe, has about 200 aircraft that are participating in this drill. There was another drill that the South Koreans had done prior to this drill. The U.S. did have some aircraft in that as well, not as many, but there were some aircraft there.
That's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me from Washington, D.C. U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price told reporters on Tuesday, Russia's attack on Ukrainian water and energy supplies are aimed at exacerbating human suffering and are particularly heinous. This as Russia is reinforcing its military with an annual draft of 120,000 men. Russian military officials have assured the conscripts to be called up starting Tuesday that they will not be sent to fight in Ukraine. However, the U.S.-based Institute for the Study of War said the Russian Defense Ministry, quote, is attempting to deceive the Russian population into believing the autumn conscripts will not be sent to fight in Ukraine, likely to prevent draft dodging, unquote. U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price.
As Ukraine works to restore water and power to its citizens, the United States remains committed to the victory of a sovereign and independent Ukraine, and we are working to deliver air defense systems so Ukraine can continue to repel these attacks. We are concerned that Russia may also seek to acquire advanced conventional weapons from Iran, surface missiles that will almost certainly be used to support Russia's war against Ukraine. This was a partnership that has existed, but clearly the Iranian regime is taking steps to deepen that partnership. Clearly, Russia is in pretty dire straits now, certainly more desperate for partners that it otherwise may not have pursued.
That's U.S. State Department spokesman Ted Price. October's Turkish energy deal with Libya's government of national accord is the latest flashpoint in growing tensions between Turkey and Greece. As Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, the effects of the rivalry are spreading in regions of Europe and the Middle East.
The energy exploration deal between Turkey and the Libyan government of national accord, which Turkey militarily backs, is a big victory for Ankara, not only financially, analysts say. Jalel Hajawi is a senior fellow at the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime in Geneva.
Libya is helping Turkey achieve economic rewards that are going to be substantial, and in the process, it is humiliating Greece. So this is the political aspect of things.
The Libyan deal allows for Turkish exploration in Mediterranean waters claimed by Greece. Analysts say Turkish and Greek forces already regularly face off in disputed waters in the dividing Aegean Sea. The Libyan deal is now threatening to expand those rivalries, say analysts, including Aya Buwela, a visiting lecturer on international relations at the Hellenic National Defense College in Athens.
We see in the past that there were face-offs near the waters in the Aegean. We've seen Turkish provocations in the territorial waters of Cyprus. The question is, as you've seen, the Greek government is incredibly angry.
Greek Foreign Minister Nikos Dendeas held talks in Cairo recently with his Egyptian counterpart Sami Shukri, and both countries condemned the Libyan energy deal. Cairo also announced it's suspending talks with Ankara that had been aimed at improving strained relations. Analysts say nations in the region are getting drawn into the dispute. Jalal Hajawi at the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime.
You have this entire croissant, if you will, like going from Greece to Cyprus to Egypt. And I insist on the Egyptian aspect, because the Egyptians, really, the way they look at the eastern half of Libya, for them, it's their own backyards. And they don't consider it acceptable at all that Turkey might conduct business on land or under the sea.
France, a strong ally of Greece and Egypt, also condemned the recent Turkish-Libyan energy deal as a violation of international law. France and Greece have a bilateral defense agreement. Paris is helping Athens modernize its military forces. Senem Aydın Düzgit is a professor of international relations at Sabancı University near Istanbul.
Both sides are also aware that that could result in a full-scale war, right? Because you don't just have Turkey and Greece in the Eastern Med. You have other countries. You have the French, you have Israel, you have Egypt. The Eastern Mediterranean right now is a huge geopolitical zone. So in that place, not just going to have the two actors and then others just watching by.
The next potential flashpoint could be if Ankara sends its energy research ships into Greek contested waters under the Libyan deal. But precisely because the stakes are so high for the region, analysts predict all sides will work to avoid any confrontation. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Thank you, Dorian. South Korea's government is taking a more contrite turn as it attempts to calm public anger over last week's Wook crush incident that killed at least 156 people. Many Seoul residents say the government should have done more to control the crowd before the unrest. VOA's Bill Gallo has more from Seoul.
As monks pray at a makeshift memorial in Seoul's Itaewon neighborhood, South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol bows and leaves a white flower on the sidewalk. His government is taking a more apologetic tone as South Koreans demand answers about one of the country's worst peacetime tragedies. Speaking Tuesday at a news conference, National Police Chief Yoon Hee-kun acknowledged police received emergency calls in the lead-up to the accident, but did not adequately respond. Yoon says he feels a heavy sense of responsibility. He says his organization will do its best to prevent future tragedies. Many question why police didn't do more to control the crowd before the deadly crush of people. Meng Gun-young was working that night as a security guard outside a nearby bar. Early in the evening, he could tell something was wrong.
근데 저희가 근무 투입되고 1시간 반 정도 후에 이미 백인 여성분 두 분이서 다리가 다치셔서.
He says when two women sustained minor leg injuries before the crowd surge, officers never responded to the scene. The 24-year-old says he was so concerned, he told his friends to stay home. He saw no police attempting to control the crowd. Police haven't determined what sparked the deadly rush, which resulted in hundreds being buried at the bottom of the small alley. The alley is short, narrow, and steep. It is now a police zone. Nearby, Professor Kim Yong-uk is leaving flowers at the memorial. He is highly critical of the government's response. He says this is not a matter of there being a stampede, as some have called it. It wasn't a problem with the road itself, and it's not that it was a private event without an organizer. The problem, he says, was government negligence. Kim is a specialist in how people move in urban spaces. He says police should have used barricades, police lines, and other tools to manage crowd flow. He thinks the alley should have been closed. Others suggest it should have been turned into a one-way street. The main issue is that there should have been more planning. He says the government and police are responsible for public safety, for any accident that occurs in public areas. That is a public road, he says, pointing to the alley. Immediately after the accident, police defended their approach. The Minister of Interior and Safety, who oversees the police, said it wasn't a problem that could have been solved by deploying police or firefighters. That comment is nonsense, says Itaewon business owner Kim Hong-gu. He says police failed to manage the out-of-control crowd. The situation is precarious for President Yoon, who already has very low approval ratings. Many, though, are focused on dealing with their grief, not talking politics. Meng, the bar security guard, remains adamant the police should have managed the crowd. They could have stopped it, he says, and yet they didn't come. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
In other news, Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro on Tuesday did not concede the election he lost to leftist Lula da Silva in a brief speech that marked his first comment since results were released 2 days ago. But afterwards, Chief of Staff Ciro Nogueira told reporters that Bolsonaro has authorized him to begin the transition process. Bolsonaro's address did not mention election results, but he said he will continue to follow the rules of the nation's constitution. Bolsonaro lost Sunday's race by a thin margin, garnering 49.1% of the vote to da Silva's 50.9%, according to the nation's electoral authority. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedofo in Washington. World Health Organization officials warn infectious disease outbreaks and malnutrition pose serious health threats to some 8 million Pakistani flood victims. Lisa Schneier reports for VOA from Geneva.
Historic floodwaters are receding in Pakistan. However, the impact of this catastrophic event on millions of survivors is far from over. The World Health Organization reports diseases are rampant, a food crisis is looming, and the economy is deteriorating. This at a time, it says, when winter is fast approaching, putting at risk the lives of people who lack shelter, fuel for heating, medical care, and other essentials. WHO Regional Emergency Director Richard Brennan says public health risks are increasing. Speaking from Cairo, he says damaged infrastructure, stagnant water, and inadequate sanitation facilities are providing breeding sites for mosquitoes. Since July, he notes, more than 540,000 cases of malaria have been reported in 32 of Pakistan's flood-drenched districts.
Other health threats include increasing cases of diarrheal diseases, an ongoing dengue fever outbreak, measles, and diphtheria. Among the biggest concerns are the high rates of severe acute malnutrition, especially in children under the age of 5 years. Access to safe water and sanitation remains limited, with people using contaminated water for household consumption. Pregnant women need access to clean and safe delivery services.
He notes more than 2,000 health facilities have been damaged or destroyed by the floods, making the provision of medical services difficult. Nonetheless, he says the WHO is working effectively across several priority health areas, including that of managing acute malnutrition.
We're doing screening in some places. We're seeing over 10% severe acute malnutrition, let alone overall malnutrition. So what WHO has done is we're supporting around 16 stabilization centers for those with severe acute malnutrition, particularly with, for kids who have complications from that. We're working with the Ministry of Health to establish another 19.
Brennan says he returned from Pakistan a few weeks ago and was overwhelmed by the massive needs, especially in hardest-hit Sindh province. Unfortunately, given the many competing emergencies around the world, he notes Pakistan's flood disaster very quickly fell off the media radar screen. He says the WHO requires $81 million to tackle Pakistan's health crisis. He warns that worse is yet to come if the international community fails to respond to this plea. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The U.S. Supreme Court's overturning of protections for abortion rights has intensified scrutiny of the personal data that technology firms collect. For women who live in states where most abortions are now illegal, their smartphones and devices could be used against them. Trina Chin reports.
When the U.S. Supreme Court recently ruled that abortion rights are not protected, it got Kara Ingersoll's creative juices flowing.
I, like, made a joke about making a t-shirt that says, "No uterus, no opinion," because I thought, oh, If I wanted this person to be in my business and in my uterus, I would hope it would be another doctor, like a gynecologist, not the Supreme Court.
The 15-year-old from Houston, Texas, also deleted her period tracking app.
I deleted it because no matter what, I don't like my information getting out.
Ingersoll isn't alone. With most abortions now outlawed in many states, digital privacy experts are worried that online activity could be weaponized against those who seek an abortion. With a search warrant or a subpoena, police can access a person's online search history, geolocation, and messaging information. Some companies have taken steps to protect privacy. Google announced it would delete users' visits to abortion clinics from their location histories, while period tracking apps like Flow are working on an anonymous mode that would omit users' personal info from their profiles. But in some cases, users may unwittingly provide consent for their devices to be searched. Digital rights advocates have stepped up calls for tech firms to limit the user data they collect and store, fueling a bigger push for federal digital privacy laws. Meanwhile, multitudes of American women who rely on technology want to know how to protect their personal information from prying eyes. Tina Trin, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to the National Science Foundation's NOAR lab, astronomers have spotted the biggest potentially dangerous asteroid in 8 years. The discovery of the 1.5-kilometer-wide 2022 AP7 is one of three near-Earth asteroids that have been found by scientists using the U.S. Department of Energy's Dark Energy Camera at NSF's Cerro Tololo Inter-American Observatory in Chile. The astronomers say the other two asteroids are safely circling the Sun in the same orbit as Earth. While most of the solar system's asteroids are located in the asteroid belt, there are a number of them residing between the Earth and the Sun. Since the glare of the Sun makes it difficult for scientists to spot these inner solar system asteroids, the astronomers had to make their observations during the brief amount of time available during twilight. I am VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It really was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. Each week, right here on The Voice of America, on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis.
Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including political candidates who are making their final pitches for the highly anticipated midterm elections on November 8th. Results will set the balance of power in Congress and state capitals around the country. We'll examine this and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Changing of the guard in Latin America's largest country. Leftist candidate and former president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva narrowly defeated right-wing populist incumbent Jair Bolsonaro in one of Brazil's most hotly contested elections. How will former President Lula unite the highly polarized electorate? Two Latin American experts discuss the ramifications of Lula's victory in Brazil. Next on Encounter on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Deadly Russian airstrikes using Iranian-made kamikaze drones are rocking cities in Ukraine, killing civilians and damaging residential buildings, power stations, sewage treatment plants, bridges, and playgrounds. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel warned that Russia's deepening alliance with Iran is something the entire world, especially those in the region, should view as a profound threat. In response, the United States, the United Kingdom, and France raised the issue of Iran's transfer of unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, at a meeting of the UN Security Council. The United States expressed its grave concerns about Russia's acquisition of these UAVs from Iran in violation of the UN Security Council Resolution 2231, said State Department spokesperson Ned Price in a statement. The United States began warning in July that Iran was planning to transfer UAVs to Russia for use in Russia's brutal war against Ukraine, said spokesperson Price. And we now have abundant evidence that these UAVs are being used to strike Ukrainian civilians and critical civilian infrastructure. Iran has denied supplying weapons to Russia despite abundant evidence to the contrary. U.S. Mission to the United Nations spokesperson Nate Evans confirmed that there is ample evidence that Russia is using Iranian-made UAVs in cruel and deliberate attacks against the people of Ukraine, including against civilians and critical civilian infrastructure. By procuring these weapons in violation of UN Security Council resolutions, Russia continues to flout international law in its pursuit of a senseless and brutal war against Ukraine, he declared. As Iran continues to lie about providing weapons to Russia for use in Ukraine, the United States is committed to working with allies and partners to prevent the transfer of dangerous weaponry to Russia, said spokesperson Price. We will not hesitate to use our sanctions and other appropriate tools on all involved in these transfers. We will also continue to surge unprecedented security assistance to Ukraine, including air defense capabilities, so that Ukraine can defend itself from these weapons.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.